Blog Talk Radio.
This is Renegade Broadcasting.
Welcome to Renegade Broadcasting. This is Nick from Circus Maximus. Tonight I'm filling in. I want to thank Kyle and everybody over at Renegade for asking me to fill in tonight. This is a special edition of Circus Maximus, and we have a guest tonight. We have Deanna Spingola. Everybody should know who Deanna is. She hosts a radio show by the name of Spingola Speaks, and her website is Spingola.com. She hosts a show on RBN on Sundays and American Free Press on Tuesdays, I believe. Hello, Deanna.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great. I asked Deanna to come on at last minute, and she was more than, obliged to come on. And the thing that kind of triggered this was the Blackstone Monument. I was going to talk about Christian Zionism today, and I am from Chicago as well as Deanna, and I was doing a lot of research regarding the foundations of Christian Zionism. It does go back a lot further, but at its hardcore movement, it took place in the mid to late 1800s going into the 1900s, and Deanna is about to release a book related to the Blackstone Monument. Can you talk about that, Deanna?
Yes. It is my third book. It's the third in a trilogy. It's called The Ruling Elite, Death, Destruction, and Domination. And it is at the publishers as we speak, going through the editorial process. And then they will send me the corrections, and I will go through those. Then it will go back, and it should be out soon.
Great. And for the most part, what is the Blackstone Memorial?
Well, the Blackstone Memorial, it was named after Reverend William Blackstone. He lived in Oak Park, Illinois. He was a dispensational Christian. He was influenced by John Darby and Dwight Moody, and he devised what is known as the Blackstone Memorial, which called for the restoration of Jews to Palestine and an end to suffering in Russia, Jewish suffering in Russia. And he actually acquired the signatures of 413 prominent Americans, including executives, politicians, Jewish and Christian church leaders, editors, publishers, and even the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. And he presented the document to President Benjamin Harrison on March 5th, 1891, which was relatively early, certainly before Wilson came in. And Wilson, as we know, was very instrumental in seeing that the Jews had everything that they needed, and he catered to their wishes, got us into World War I. And so anyway, it was William Blackstone that got it started early. The Chicago Tribune printed the text of this document, and many major newspapers publicized it for several weeks. And Harrison would not act upon the memorial. So Blackstone presented it to President Theodore Roosevelt, who also did not respond as Blackstone had hoped. And meanwhile, in 1897, leaders of the World Jewish Conference, the first one that was held, was happening. It was that was in July of 1897. The Zionists created a German branch of the Congress, and Max I. Bodenheimer directed that until 1910, and it was Theodore Herzl who was acting as chair, and he wanted to convene the conference in Munich, but opposition by the leadership of both the Orthodox and Reform communities compelled him to change the location to Switzerland, Basel, Switzerland. So in 1897, the Odessa Committee had more than 4,000 members who then joined the Zionist organization, which established the first Zionist Congress, and they met from August 29th to August 31st in 1897. And it's amazing that all the things that went on in that particular year, all of the arrangements and the just a lot of things. In fact, I have a timeline on my website. If people want to visit Spingola.com, and if they, just under the photos of the books, you will see timeline of book 2 and 3. And if they just click on that timeline, and they can go to 1897, and there's just a whole lot of things going on in 1897. The Zionist Organization of America was founded. The Britain and America formalized their alliance with the Pilgrim Society. William McKinley became president. The American Medical Association was incorporated in Chicago, Illinois.
Hey, Deanna, McKinley was actually one of the signatures for Blackstone, by the way.
Yes, yes, he was. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I mean, that's important to note. And Turkey declared war on Greece. Just all sorts of things happened. And as I mentioned, the first Zionist Congress in Switzerland. The Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion was issued. Vickers, DuPont, Nobel, Cohn, Kottweiler, and others created a military trust. It was the founding of the General Jewish Labor Bund. So a lot of things were going on. And I think one of the most interesting things that happened in 1897 is that Britain and America formalized their alliance with the Pilgrim Society. Not only did they do that, they also made a decision that they were going to share equally in the plunder when they went to war, that they would go to war together and that they would share in the plunder of the countries that they were victorious over.
So the Pilgrim Society, that was something that I researched early on, and you know, when I first got into this Illuminati kind of mindset, you know, it's the Illuminati or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The Pilgrim Society is real, and my understanding is it's a set of blue bloods that are part of their own kind of think tank per se, but it's more so a family lineage that's allowed to be in.
Well, it was started by the same group of people. Of course, a lot of the people that hung around with Cecil John Rhodes, who was Freemason, and it was a lot of the people that were around the round table, what they called the round table.
The Rhodes-Milner round table.
Right. And which, of course, we know about the Rhodes Scholarship Program. And so, anyway, there was every single president and every single Secretary of State has been a member of the Pilgrim Society literally since it began. And of course, there were a lot of other people. Well, when you look at the roundtable members, people like William T. Stead and let's see, Edward Mandel House, Walter Lippmann, Whitney Shepherdson, James Shotwell, Charles Seymour, Isaiah Bowman, they were part of the intelligence organization that was also called the Inquiry. So you find these same kinds of people, these same, as you call them, blue bloods, associated with Cambridge and
Oxford,
and
the Ivy League schools in America, like possibly
yes.
Yale and Harvard,
yeah, right,
Princeton, and all those big boys.
Yep.
Now I see a lot of connection with Yale to Chicago with the fomentation of Christian Zionism too, with a lot of the railroad bigwigs and oil and real estate and finance. I don't know if you saw that connection with Skull and Bones in Yale.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And
yeah.
A lot of things built up even before Blackstone even went to Palestine with his daughter in 1888. Didn't he write Jesus is Coming or something like that?
Yes. What did he write? Let me just... Blackstone. What did he write?
He wrote a pamphlet that ended up being translated in several different languages.
Yes.
I think Moody published it and helped do the work for him after it got done.
Yes. Let's see.
And then he's also connected with C.I. Schofield as well.
Yes. Yeah.
He's from Chicago, by the way, isn't he?
Yeah. All these people. I mean, we just have a plethora of people that were from Chicago, and so many things happened in Chicago. People are. The ADL was founded in Chicago. I'm sure it was. The ADL was it founded in Chicago?
You know, that's a good question.
I think it might have been.
I've heard it discussed so many different times and never really put the two together.
Yeah. But anyway, Pilgrim Society was founded in 1891, and it was actually founded in not in Chicago, but in England, and then they had a branch here. And that was founded in 1902, and then you had a lot of people that joined it. And anyway,
Deanna, I found that the Blackstone family was the original settlement over in Boston.
Oh, really?
The original settler who actually was a landowner. Who started leasing off his property as rent and things of that nature. They come from a family over in England that is of knighthood. They've been knighted and landowners and barons over in England as well prior to America.
Well, you find that a lot of the of influential people seem to step forward. People who were not Jewish who did step forward and assist the Jews in their objectives. For instance, when Blackstone was attempting to get support for his document, for the memorial, it was Isidore Strauss,
Yes.
And Brandeis.
Yes.
Louis Brandeis and Nathan Strauss, who Nathan and Isidore owned Macy's. And
Marshall Fields was involved, Carson Peary Scott.
Mm-hmm.
All the original Jewish department stores that
right.
kind of no longer, for the most part. I don't know. Is Carson Peary Scott even around? I know Marshall Fields got gobbled up.
I think it is. I don't do a lot of shopping, but yes, they are around. I'm thinking they.
Yeah, this is all the Jewish, the garments and linens
right.
and the textile industry that they've controlled for so long is.
Oh, absolutely. I worked in the textile industry. I was a rep for about 8 years, and I represented between 5 and 7 companies, most of them out of New York.
There was one that I went on a sales call with over in Elk Grove Village, one of the largest industrial parks in America, and one of my sales calls was a textile plant. And the owner of it was a Rothschild.
Really? When was that?
This was when I was in telecom about 3 or 4 years ago.
Oh, really?
Industries over in Elk Grove. They've got locations in California as well.
No kidding.
Yep. They've got about 6 or 7 locations.
Holy cow.
Yeah. And I brought up in my sales call, I'm like, oh, you're one of those evil banker Rothschilds, huh?
Did you really?
He started cracking up. He goes, no, I'm pretty much serving my father right now, running his business.
Wow. Well, that's the way they do it. I mean, from father to son to grandson. Yeah.
He didn't seem too evil, but again,
Well, the people that I worked for, they didn't, well, I don't know. I better...
I'm sure it wasn't the best experience. I'm sure you've had better management or ownership to work
with. Yes, yes.
I've worked for a Jewish company. It was a telecom company before. And they didn't pay you for 30 days before you got your first paycheck. And it happened to be on December 21st when I was going to get my first check. And they were having a Christmas party. And we were supposed to get out of work, only work a half a day. And I was sick. So I went in there to go get my paycheck, and the vice president wouldn't give it to me, and he threw a tantrum, went up to the owner's office, they're both Jewish, and he's yelling in Yiddish or whatever, and the other guy is freaking out, and he ends up giving my paycheck, but I said, why you gotta act like such a dick? And then he ends up saying, oh, I'm calling 911, and I'm like,
what?
For what? Because I want my paycheck, and it's been a month since I've gotten it, and I would like to do some Christmas shopping since I haven't been able to do it for my family, And so I ended up getting my check and walk out, but I never went back.
Wow.
That's just how they are.
That is just how they are. I repped one company, and people warn me, oh, they're going to cheat you. And, of course, they do. They cheat you every way they can. And I was a commission rep, and I earned money based on what I sold. And I sold fabrics and laces and trims to several of the stores and to designers. And
was it like window treatments kind of thing?
Oh, no, no.
Oh. Okay.
Trims, bridal trims. I sold to Vogue Fabrics. I sold to Fishman Fabrics downtown Chicago.
Okay.
I sold to a lot of the quilt shops because I carried a line of cotton, and I carried the bridal trims and laces. Laces out of England, out of Switzerland. I sold to the American Doll. In fact, American Doll was one of my very first companies.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
when I met them, they were in a little tiny office in downtown Madison, and I was repping an outfit called Capital Imports, and it was run by a Jewish individual who had moved to Florida, Tallahassee, Florida, and I did a lot of sewing, sewing, heirloom sewing, just mm-hmm. which is a special kind of sewing. And so I called on American Girl Doll, and then I ended up going up there and spending the entire day. I took my sewing machine with me, And I showed them how to use the laces that I was going to sell them. I designed one of the outfits for one of the dolls. And I kept them as a client. And the last time that I called on them, Ashley took the owner of the company with me. The owner flew into Chicago, and one of the lace manufacturers in Switzerland flew over.
Wow.
And I picked them up at O'Hare, drove them up to Madison, and the offices by this time were quite large. The factory was the size of a football field, and so anyway.
Nice.
But they started out very small.
Well, that's a great account, though. It's a good thing to have on your resume.
Oh, gosh. It was a fabulous account. Even though they were getting, by this time, just thousands of yards of lace, and they were getting a big discount on it, I still did very well because of the volume that they did. And of course, by then, they were shipping most of the production out of the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is common.
Which is common.
Too bad you don't get a residual on that account, huh?
Yeah, but that's okay. That's okay. But anyway, I had a lot of the, a couple of the companies that would cheat me. Oh, gosh. It was just typical. Just typical.
I think I only worked for a Jewish owner once and never again. Never.
Yeah.
And I love stealing their business now.
Sure. Well, I worked for one company for 3 months, and they had decided that they were, no matter how much I sold, that I was only going to get paid $500 a month. And I thought,
what? Well,
right.
I'm going to work my minimum then.
Yeah. But remember, that was just one of the few, companies that I rep. But, gosh, I mean, it was amazing. I could sell, just... And trims, usually you make a 15% on everything that you sell. But and then on fabrics, you make 5%. It varied. But
sure, absolutely.
Yeah, it was difficult working for them, and in more ways than one. They were just morally, they just seemed lacking.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they take care of their own better than someone that's not one of their own. So I would imagine.
Well, at trade shows, which I attended a lot of trade shows, had to go to New York a few times. I mean, they just, in fact, one time I had a booth next to one of them, and he was saying, oh, yeah, I'm getting a divorce, and nah, no, would you like to go out with me? And I said, no, I don't think so. And I saw, about 2 months later, I saw them at a meeting under completely different circumstances, mm-hmm. and I went up to the gentleman, and he was with the woman, and he said, oh, this is my wife. And I said, oh, I thought you told me you were getting a divorce.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So we've got a call. Would you like to take a call right now? Or?
Sure.
Okay, great. It's 205. Please state your name.
Hey, I'm just listening in.
All right, Jeb. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Yeah, sometimes it's hard to know whether they really want to talk to you or whether they're just listening in on their phone. But
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, I've got one more that's been on since the beginning. They might be just listening to you. Let's see.
Okay.
And unknown 011.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes. Who's calling?
Hey, this is Marcus. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing great. What's going on? You have anything that you would like to ask Deanna or add to the conversation?
Oh, I've been listening to Deanna's show for about a year now.
Good.
I'm the German guy. Yeah. She probably knows me. We've been,
yes, hi, how are you?
Yeah, never talked to you, only on the internet, via email.
Yes, well,
so
thank you so much.
We would like more
Canada
supporters to call in. Go ahead.
Yeah,
call
I really like Deanna's show, many shows of hers. are very revealing, and just wanted to express that.
Well, I really appreciate that, and I appreciate all that you've done. I appreciate your emails, and I thank you very much.
Yep. It's very, very good to refer to someone new to this whole thing, to your shows, since they're not so radical and well-behaved.
Well, thank you.
It's always a good show to send someone over who had never heard about this controversy or a different perspective on World War II and so forth.
Sure.
So, yeah, thank you for that. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Yes. Yes, of course, a lot of people, particularly in this country and even in Germany, have really never understood the accurate history of World War II, particularly because of the denazification program in Germany, and because so many of the younger Germans were literally shipped out of the country. And of course, in this country, under the government school system, we've just learned that those horrible Nazis were just terrible, and which in fact is not the case at all. So, and this needs to be talked about.
That's right. The whole Axis powers, I mean, including Hungary and Italy and Finland and the Baltic states, it's not only Germany and Italy, what people believe. It's also France. I mean, Vichy France was totally free of the Rothschilds, and it was a good country back then. And then after 45, they demonized Vichy and the German occupation. They made it a big deal. I mean, it wasn't really a big deal since only the Wehrmacht was there for military advancement against the British and Americans. But other than that, France was a sovereign country, basically, and with their own police force and so forth, right?
To an extent. I mean, there was a lot of Jewish influence in France early on after the revolution, but they certainly got roped into the war because they had allied with England, and so... It was kind of unfortunate. The whole war was unfortunate, and even Poland
got
roped into it because of the lies that people like William Bullitt told the Polish. Oh, if you'll just aggravate Germany, if you will go into Germany, we will back you. Well, in fact, they didn't back them at all. So the whole war was set up. And of course, the target was Germany. That was the main target because of the economic system that Hitler had set up. If all the other countries had taken that example and set that same kind of economic system up in their country and had thrown out the bankers as Germany had, then the bankers would have lost a lot of money in Europe and elsewhere.
Absolutely, and I thought about the when the Germans defeated France and when they occupied Denmark and Holland and other countries, it was always pretty clean, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
France, they only neutralized the country, but they never forced them to switch. Other than the Allies, you know, when they invaded Romania, France, Italy, they always forced the government to switch sides. So it wasn't only like neutralizing the country and keep moving forward to end the war, but it was always, okay, you guys, we're now in charge, and you have to switch sides. And Germany never did that. Not in Denmark, not in the Czech Republic, not in Norway, even though Norway was just, occupied,
mm-hmm.
and not in France. So,
right.
So that's another thing that we have to understand, you know,
sure.
war game, you know.
Well, even Czechoslovakia was really a brand new country that was devised at the end of World War One, and it was just like a sword, a jut of land right into the middle of the heart of Germany. And, of course, many of the citizens were German, had been for a long time. And you can say the same thing about Poland. Poland was recreated after World War One, and a lot of German citizens live there. 96%
yeah.
of Danzig was German. And
mm-hmm.
these citizens were all of a sudden under a different flag, which in
yeah.
most cases, with Polish, the Polish government took to persecuting them. And the Polish government was composed of a lot of Jewish influence. So it was, and of course, 10% of the people in Poland were Jews.
And then in Czechoslovakia in 1947-48, when the State of Israel was initially founded, it was Czechoslovakia that supplied Israel in their defense a bunch
mm-hmm.
of times.
Sure.
Yeah,
with
just
people,
really
of course.
I just recently watched a pretty good documentary about Austria and the Austrian-Hungarian Empire and what happened World War One. And it, basically the same catastrophe that happened to Germany happened to Austria. So
mm-hmm.
basically every major industrial factory was basically in German Austria. And the supply lines came out of Romania, Czechoslovakia, and Croatia, and Hungary. And then the Allies forced that empire, or that it was basically like a foreign union, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and they
mm-hmm.
forced it to split up. So all these supply lines were cut off. So Croatia and Hungary, they were cut off of the Austrian machinery and technology and so forth, and Austria
mm-hmm.
was cut off of the supply lines, the raw
sure.
materials. So
right.
the whole Axis power, you know, that Croatia and Hungary were allies with Austria and with Germany, and that Czechoslovakia was pro-German. It makes total sense, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the propaganda says otherwise now, but
sure.
it's just natural. It's just natural for them to be pro-German. And
hey, caller,
I've
got a question. Caller, what's your first name again?
Martin,
I'm next. What is your outlook on the Ukraine-Russian situation and NATO and all that?
Yeah, I think, I'm kind of divided because I was very pro Svoboda, or Svoboda, whatever the party is.
Yeah,
when I first heard about them, the whole history of being social nationalists and adapting a lot of national socialist ideas and so forth. So I was very pro-Svoboda in the first place, but then I learned that they kind of colluded with the internationalists. They met with McCain and so forth. So I don't really know what to think of them. And on the other side, I'm also very pro-Russian, pro-Putin. And I just learned about, I heard an interview of a so-called Russian German. That's someone who is from Russia, but who is a German by blood and who returned to Germany. So he speaks Germany. He speaks German, and he is, but he has an accent from Russia, and he grew up there and so forth. But he talked about this whole thing. And
Deanna, what's your outtake on Ukraine?
Well, the Ukraine has always been the breadbasket of Europe, and a lot of the people that in about 1775, the Russian government invited many Germans into the Ukraine to develop the area, and they were the Volga, the Germans, and many of the Germans, or many of the people who were starved to death by the Soviets were actually Volga Germans who happened to have settled very early on and developed the land there. And the Ukraine is just, they've always been very independent because they were landowners. They owned the land. And, of course, the Soviet, the first five-year plan, economic plan, destroyed the land ownership there. So it's always been a very troubled area. I think they deserve to be independent, but I think that that the West ought to just back off, get the heck out of there. And I really haven't studied it sufficiently to know. I've heard really good things about Putin, but there's still something. I mean, he's ex-KGB.
Right.
And
He started a new party when he, after the collapse of the Soviet Union. And we must not forget that Ukraine was always a part of Russia. And it's basically the motherland of the whole Russian nation. And
the
Ukrainian,
yes.
No. Just the old Russia was in Ukraine, and then it kind of went east, and Ukraine became independent. And Ukrainian and Russian language is basically like Dutch and German. It's kind of like the same. It's just a different dialect. So you can't really say that Ukraine is so independent from Russia. I get it, and I'm very, very much in favor of the Ukrainian nationalists, and I know of the Ukrainian Waffen SS, and that they still honor their allegiance to them and so forth. But it's very complicated. This whole situation is very complicated, and then we must not forget the history. Even under the Tsar, the Ukrainians were not allowed to speak Ukrainian, but they had to write in Russian letters, while the Ukrainians in Galicia, which was controlled by Austria, they were allowed to express their own language and their own customs and so forth. That's why the core of the Svoboda, the social nationalists who think that national socialism is the greatest thing ever, who have an allegiance to Western Europe and Germany and so forth, basically centered in eastern Ukraine, in Galicia. There was control under Austria. So that's the whole European thing, and it's very exciting to see this unfold, in my opinion, because we were so divided, and now we had Poland back into the scene, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, after the collapse of Soviet Union, and nobody talked about Ukraine or White Russia, basically, until this happened now, and I'm very glad about it. Yeah, I'm very glad about that.
But why is this all of a sudden happening now? Who benefits?
Yeah, good question. I mean, it's really amazing that they put it all on the mainstream media, and everything that's so, you know, all over the mainstream media is always kind of suspicious. Don't you agree, Deanna?
Yes, of course.
What about the pipeline? What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I'm just suspicious of this whole right sector, right extremists. I don't know what to think of them. They, on the one hand, they're nationalists, and then on the other hand, they pledge allegiance to the Jewish people and so forth. And
yeah, that's very problematic, in my opinion.
Yeah. So I don't know.
As far as the Ukrainian president.
Yeah, I had a good impression of Bobo. I don't know what they're doing, if they're just playing their cards and just playing on both sides now and just waiting for...
Is the president of Ukraine Jewish?
I don't know. Could be.
Okay.
I have no idea.
Know
I just know...
Well, no, I don't.
Know. Yeah, right sector is basically fell out right away. I mean, I figured that, but so far, I don't know what they, if they're just waiting for their time or, you know, playing politics now, I don't know.
Does this have anything to do with the pipelines, the Russian pipelines feeding Europe?
Yeah, I mean, the Russians, they have their pipelines going through Ukraine. And we have to see. I mean, I think Putin is still better than anyone else, but it just could be that the Russians are 20 or 30 years behind. You know, I mean, nowadays, Reagan was wonderful, you know, but comparing to the status quo, Reagan was bad. You know what I mean? He was still,
sure.
I mean, considering what we have now, you know, with all the queer rights and all that, Reagan was good. But maybe we have the same situation in Russia or Eastern Europe. It's just 20 or 30 years behind the whole agenda. I don't know if they're really an opposition or just
isn't there an ultimate goal to form an entire one-world government, though, and a one-world religion and a one-world
mm-hmm.
police force?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
That's the carrot that we need to keep looking at. Like
mm-hmm.
the whole who benefits thing, it's always an incremental step in order to make that happen for them.
Sure.
Yeah.
Is World War III inevitable? Can it be
avoided?
Yeah,
I tell you what. I don't oppose the idea of a European Union. But I know how they do it is just to exploit and to deceive people. But other than that, if it was honest and on a nationalist partnership basis, I think it's a wonderful thing. You know, to travel, I mean, all the benefits we have to travel from one country to another, if it was really just for us and not for deception and then let in the people from all around the world, you know. I think it's a good thing, but the way it plays out, it's just not right.
Yeah, I think that the European Union, they made it sound like it would be a great benefit, but it has changed the currency, it has changed the independent nations a great deal. Even though you can travel from country to country and you don't have to worry about changing the currency from one country to another, I think that it was designed to condense. It's the same thing as the North American Union. Putting Canada, the United States, and Mexico together, which happened in 2005 between those three countries, most people in America do not even know anything about. They just haven't commonized the currency yet.
Right, Deanna, if they would just open the borders within Europe, we could cope with it. You know, if people from Sweden would go freely to Spain, if Portuguese could freely go to Latvia if they wanted to, that's one thing. But then open up the borders for everyone so that Africans can travel from Ireland to Poland if they wanted to. I mean, that's just wrong, you know.
You're talking about homogenizing the races, multiculturalism, which is very, I don't believe in multiculturalism.
Yeah,
and we're in that melting pot now in Chicago, aren't we, Deanna?
Oh, yeah. We've been in a melting pot ever since the guy that wrote that the script for that play, what was it, The Melting Pot that he wrote?
Yeah. Yeah,
and since Emma Lazarus did her little poem that went on the Statue of Liberty, you know, give us your poor, your people who are willing to be free, but you know, don't worry about having a job or anything. Just come on in, we'll take care of you. And hasn't worked out real well.
Yeah, what you were saying, Deanna, as far as a North American Union. It's basically now that I see it is a North American, Central American, and South American Union called the Organization of American States.
Right, right.
The OAS.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another little, like, truther, like, what you call a Tea Party group, also called the OAS.
Right.
A lot of the, John Stettmiller is part of the OAS. But not the Organization of American States, the Tea Party, Birther, all that type of right-wing type.
Sure.
Patriot Radio type of group called the OAS, but not the same one. But yeah, and it says that it formed in 1948 along with the creation of Israel for the most part. But it wasn't as prominent now as it is now. It's 35 states. All of them are part of this charter now.
Wow. Well, then you have the transatlantic agenda and all kinds of other things, which was adopted when 1995, and that was under Clinton.
Yeah, so, yeah. GATT and GAFTA or
CAFTA and NAFTA. And
NAFTA, yeah. And
GATT. Mm-hmm.
And someone else I heard over the years said that Colin Powell was actually signing America into the American Union. North American Union on 9/11 on that day. So I don't know.
Huh.
I don't know if there's any truth to that, but we did have it. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I haven't heard that. I know that that the leaders of the three countries, Vincente Fox, George W. Bush, and Canadian Prime Minister Paul Martin met in Waco, Texas on March 23rd, 2005.
Okay.
And that is when they met at Baylor University, and there were no security cameras or media coverage of the event, and they established what is referred to as the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America, and that's when it got going. And then on May 17th of 2005, the Council of Foreign Relations created an independent task force to study the three-country pact. It was a 31-member task force chaired by John F. Manley, and they did what they could to kind of make this a cohesive kind of a situation where they could really implement it and kind of set up a roadmap to address all the challenges that would face this North American Union, the three countries, and so that's and these the target date was 2010, and but I don't think they met it.
Right. Well, they've always had things like, what was it, prior to the UN, they had another organization prior.
League of Nations.
Prior to the CIA, they had the OSS. So it's just an incremental buildup.
Sure.
Same with other think tanks that evolve over time. We've got another caller at 618. I believe that's Wisconsin. Hold on real quick.
Thanks, Marcus, for calling in.
Hi, 618.
I'm calling from Illinois, but I was listening a little so far, and seeing you guys are going into like the North American Union, I thought about that a little bit. I wondered if it wasn't like the World Bank behind that, because, you know, if they can make the euro, then the Amero, that's just further centralizing their power over other nations, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, let's not forget that religion was used, for the most part, first to occupy a nation, and then central banks are implemented. But now today, since religion is so prevalent all over the world, now it's just the central banks installed because people have already been indoctrinated with whatever Jewish scheme that was in place for them to be docile. So, yeah, the North American Union, it just slipped, you know, between the cracks, mostly because people were under trauma from 9/11.
Sure. Well, oh, yeah, anytime you have a big event like that, they are going to implement new legislation to cover it, and you have all kinds of executive orders, and then, of course, you talked about the World Bank, which was literally developed, well, the Monetary and Financial Conference at Bretton Woods.
Bretton Woods, yeah.
Yeah, in 1944, in July of 1944, and that's in New Hampshire. And it was really the meeting to consider the economic considerations and to discuss the ramifications of the Versailles Treaty and contemplate a post-war currency stability and really just to set up a world plan. And this was drafted. One of them was drafted by Harry Dexter White. And then you had John Maynard Keynes. I'm probably not pronouncing that correctly. But they both called for an international agency to promote cooperation and world commerce, and of course, free trade has always been a part of all of this. Free trade was something that they talked about even before the so-called Civil War.
Free trade for who?
Yeah, well, just for certain people. The people that have always been in charge of trade.
The merchants.
Yes, the merchants.
It's the
merchants. Merchant class.
The merchant class. We had... there was a debate, you know, versus people who believe it's the Jesuits versus the Zionists or the Jews in general. And the people who were saying that it's the Jesuits are like, yes, it's the Venetians. Well, then if you really dig, who were the Venetians? They were the merchant class of Italy.
Sure.
So, hey, 618, did you have anything else you wanted to add? You sounded like you were familiar with some of these topics.
I mean, it just sounds kind of like you're saying like a global centralized capitalism, like they're trying to put it in fewer and fewer hands and centralize it further and further across the globe. And yeah, I think that makes sense because, I mean, I've looked into past revolutions and it seems like all they did was replace the monarchy with the merchant class or like the middle class from that time and make them like a new monarchy. So, and I mean, even look, they all interbreed with each other. They're all related and everything. So, I mean, it seems like they did replace the monarchy, you know, with their business people, what they did.
Well,
so.
Now the Jesuits don't need to wear cloaks or, you know, look like monks anymore. They wear suits.
I read about the oaths of the Jesuits. Weren't they like assassins that tried to like infiltrate cultures or something like that for the church or something?
Basically, yeah. They were formed originally from the Los Alumbrados Society. They were a Murano, Sephardic Jew, you know, conversions over to Catholicism, but they were still, you know, the illumined ones and were given a basically a charter to pretty much work for the Vatican in order to spread Christianity throughout the world. But it wasn't the type of Christianity that, you know, a regular you know, fair-going person would be appreciative of. It was used in deception. It was transformed and used in order to manipulate the minds of the indigenous. And then eventually they were able to scope out and track out the lands that they had invaded while under the guise of being missionaries. And then you got your conquistadors that basically invaded and took over. And, you know, and then you've got your central banks and all that kind of stuff eventually to where we're at today. So the Jesuits aren't really as important as a faction as they used to be, but their institutions, their universities are where all of your leaders come from.
So I heard a theory once that, like, all of our original universities were started by the Jesuits, and they were
You got Boston College, you got Georgetown, Fordham. A lot of different, what's his face? The Vice President Biden, he went to another school over in Pennsylvania, I believe. That's a Jesuit school as well. So, I mean, it's not that it's the Vatican in charge. It's just the institution, the teaching, what it means to be Jesuitical. It's deception. It's kind of like the Mossad motto, you know, we rule by deception or however it's said.
So it's like they could be filtering out knowledge that's being brought back. It's like they're getting in between you and the knowledge to their universities in the same way like a priest gets in between you and the Bible and tells you to take it their way. So, and you think they could kind of do that with the academic world then? Like they would be filtering it in their kind of way?
It's militaristic, it's strategical, it's religious, it's all the above. I mean, even Farrakhan went to Boston College. That's a Jesuit university. So, no, it's not the Vatican that's in charge. That's not what I'm trying to say. I'm just saying that the institutions put in place by the Jewish elite are in place in order for the world leaders to be taught.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think about this new pope that's trying to act like he's anti-capitalist and everything? Like, what do you think of that?
Well, I understand that he might be even Jewish. There's been a lot of Jews.
Exactly, yes. All the churches have been infiltrated.
Especially the Vatican II.
Yeah.
Vatican II basically just represents, we're just fomenting the one world order for the future capital called Israel.
Right.
Even, Cardinal Spellman, you know, he, if you look in Jewish archives, he had always been appreciative of the Jews, and part of Vietnam, they even called it Cardinal Spellman's War.
Exactly. Yep. Yep. And he's the one that that recommended the leader for southern South Vietnam, Nguyen. He's the one that recommended him, and he was installed.
Yeah, New York has a lot of influence when it comes to decision-making powers, when it comes to the Cardinals.
Yep.
Cardinal in New York has more power than the president.
Although the president is the CEO of the U.S. corporation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, did you have anything more to add? 618.
One thing that kind of confuses me is, like, Hitler and the Catholic Church, they seem to kind of like have an admiration for each other in a sense, you know.
Deanna knows a lot really about that as far as her research. Do you have anything to add about the relation with Hitler and the Catholic Church?
Well, a lot of people think that when Hitler came to power that he shut down all of the churches, when in fact there were about 2,500 new churches built under Hitler. And I don't know that that they had a mutual admiration society, but he didn't marginalize them at all, the church.
I'd seen pictures of them like saluting together, and I think the last pope, I think he was actually Hitler Youth at one point, like the last pope, and I heard that they had helped the Nazis and stuff, some of them that were trying to flee, you know.
Help the Nazis do what?
Oh, the ones, just ones that were, like, trying to flee the Nuremberg trials and all that crap. You know, like, I heard that the church, like, assisted them somewhat, but...
I don't think so.
The Vatican Rat Line, they call it?
I don't think so.
Operation Bloodstone and Operation Paperclip.
Well, paperclip was the stealing, the seizure of the intellectual assets of Germany. I mean, they took between 300,000 and 600,000 patents out of Germany, and they also took many of the intellectuals. It was either you come with us to the United States or to Russia, or else we're going to you'll be sorry. So I can hear your radio on in the background, 618. And so a lot of people did come over to this country, not necessarily willingly, but it was under Operation Paperclip.
I would say
plundering. It's part of the plundering.
I would look up Operation Bloodstone too, because it's not really talked about so much. It kind of relates to the paperclip, but it was a little separate, but at the same time frame.
Well, you guys think, like, on one hand, they try to say that the Bush family was trying to make a coup in America on behalf of the Nazis, you know, like kind of like a takeover. Then on the other hand, you look at, like, they're like Christian Zionists. I mean, it's like, how could they be Christian Zionists on one hand, and on the other hand, you know, they were willing to work with the Nazis, like,
The Bush family wasn't working for the Nazis. You are referring to a book that was written by a Jew who
Wall Street and Hitler.
Well, that one was written by Anthony Sutton, which is full of a lot of misinformation, disinformation. But consider that he was associated with the Hoover Institute, which was highly compromised.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm talking about the one that was written. Hang on just a second. Let me just grab it. Okay, the book that you're talking about is called Trading with the Enemy, The Nazi American Money Plot, 1933 to 1949, by Charles Higham, who happened to be Jewish. and so you're going to have a very, very biased account in here.
Of course.
But what Paperclip was a seizure of the intellectual property of Germany.
Which was to instill America as the new superpower for the most part.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Which was a Jewish design. So.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, anything else?
I was wondering if there is any truth to Ford. I heard that he financed the Nazis getting their uniforms and things like that. I mean, it just seemed like some of the catalysts at the time.
Ford, the
motor, the vehicle industry.
Ford Motors actually did that in Russia.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I didn't know. I heard that the Rockefeller financed.
Ford did. He liked Hitler. He thought that they were doing a very good job. If you read The International Jew, which is something that that was serialized in a newspaper owned by Ford in Detroit, I mean, he had a lot of admiration for Hitler. I think you probably have the Americanized version of who Adolf Hitler was.
You need to listen to some of Deanna's old shows.
Who?
Listen to some of Deanna Spingola, our guest who you're speaking with, some of her archives on RBN.
Awesome. Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm not really familiar with her work, but...
Yeah, Deanna's got a long history of breaking down German history during World War One, and World War II especially.
See, what we've learned in the government schools is not accurate.
Oh, I know. Probably... I mean, it's just all confusing subject to me. I see contradictions and things, you know. I'm just trying to get...
Of course. To the... You're going to. We all have. Since we were born, almost.
I don't know.
So that's
confuses
why it's important. Yeah, that's why it's important for you to keep asking questions and digging and do your research.
I kind of assumed that everybody was just profiting class, no matter what happened. You know, they were going to benefit ultimately anyway, so I figured the contradictions, maybe they just didn't matter or something. I don't know.
Well, did Germany benefit after the fact?
Oh, definitely didn't. All the bombing, and they got murdered and everything.
Did Japan not benefit after the fact? Eh, a little bit. They were kind of
establish as electronic, but they were just slaves for the rest of, they were just a new farm to produce electronics.
Sure. Yep.
And cars. So.
And cars.
Yep. And all right, 618, thanks for the call, though. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Got one more call. All right, 614. Hi, 614. Sorry for the hold.
Oh, hey. Hey, how's it going, Nick?
Good.
Good. Yeah, Deanna, you've done great shows. I just want to give you credit. You know, I've listened to quite a few of them, and they're great.
Thank you.
Oh, no. Yeah, you're welcome. But right now, I want to take the conversation to the current situation in Ukraine.
Yes, please.
And I called up ABC New York, NBC New York, and CBS New York, and I asked them, do you know what the Holodomor means? And they had no clue.
What?
My gosh.
I was like, why are you trying to promote World War III when you don't even know the history behind that area? And, I just got so upset. It's madness. I mean, I called up Dennis Fetcho, all right, but with the Syria debacle. Actually, no. I called up every single news station in the country, L.A., New York, Houston, Chicago, Miami. I called them all up. I said, go to InsideTheEyeLive.com. Go listen, all right? And we do not need war with Syria. So now it's kind of like we got to do the same thing now with Ukraine, okay? Because it's insane. It's totally, it's out of the membrane. It's totally disgusting. We do not need to go in there and do anything. If anything, they need reparations, the poor things, you know? I mean, Ukraine is really Lithuania. If you go back 300-400 years, it's greater Lithuania. Lithuania, I'm just starting to do research on Lithuania. And Frank, who has been a caller at Renegade, and he's Lithuanian, and,
Lithuanian
he's
too.
A good guy. Pardon?
I'm part Lithuanian as well.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. I'm German, French, English, British. British, French, mainly just British and German, but a little bit of French, but.
Okay, so what have you found out about the situation today that you see as being important for people to hear you talk about it?
Pardon?
The situation in Ukraine and Russia, what have you found in your research that we should know about, that we should listen to you and what you've found out about?
Well, basically... I'm just beginning the research on that, and it's ongoing. But yes, Ukraine and Lithuania. Google search ancient Ukrainian maps or ancient maps of Europe, and you can see, the divide and conquer. You can see and look. And kind of understand, the racial tones and the lines that have been drawn. You can see how people have fought, but we need to stop fighting. We need to stop fighting. We need to come together and stop fighting. We need to be congruent. We need to be smart so we can reach up and go to Mars or the stars,
How do we have that power to control what's happening overseas, though, Ray? I mean, shouldn't we focus on what we know locally and let people know, like on radio? Otherwise, people aren't really going to listen to us in English language when they're overseas listening or speaking a different language. Should we focus on more at home and what we can do here with the people around us?
Sure, sure. And
I mean,
we can also...
It's definitely important to be concerned about what's going on over there, but I wouldn't try to be so I guess I don't want to be so self-absorbed in what's going on over there. It's important to know what's going on there and to do your research. But let's see what we can do over here.
Sure.
Make a difference.
Yeah, I just don't want World War III to break out, you know, and Definitely. Have massive amounts of troops being, you know, put on the borders, you know, and
there are massive amounts of troops all over. The U.S. military has bases throughout the world. We are already in a war. We are in a really, really big war, and we don't even know that it's happening. I mean, if you consider all of the people who die at the hands of the medical industry in this country, I believe it's about 900,000 people a year die because of medical mishaps, intervention. We are at war. Right here in our own
My dad
country.
Included.
Just,
yes.
It just
my dad,
doesn't...
My dad was... But,
go ahead.
Yes, my father, I watched my father die. I told him, do not take chemo. Do not do this. Do not go this route. And he said, well, I hooked him up with the herbs. This was back in 99. I hooked him up with the herbs. I hooked him up with, you know, standard process. I hooked him up with, you know, a lot of stuff, and he still said, Ray, I'm going to do what you say. I'm going to take your herbs, your standard process, but I'm still going to go the conventional route, and it killed him.
Of
I watched
course.
Him die. I watched
yes.
him die.
And I'm very sorry, that occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
terrible
where we got to focus. We got to focus at home.
Terrible, because I knew it was going to happen. I told him it was going to happen, and
sure.
he didn't listen. You know, it's like you tell somebody not to go down that road because there's machine gunners. They're going to ambush you. You know, they're going to get you. And, you know, I'm warning you. You know, it's like, you know, and that's what we're doing to the public. But the public are too sheepish and stupid to get it. I don't know. What are we going to do? We got to hit them over the head with a 2x4, Deanna?
We
got to
do propaganda for our own people.
Right. Education is
yeah.
the key.
Exactly.
Yeah, but sometimes we got to educate by the 2x4. I don't know. I mean, people just don't get it. I mean, we don't need World War III. We don't.
Well, what I'm saying is that it is a very, very subtle war. 57 million babies have been through abortion have been killed in this country. I mean, that's quite a number, 57 million. Okay, then you have all of the people dying because of the medical intervention, and then you have all of the other nonsense, the fluorides and the aspartames and all of this other stuff. There is a war going on, but it's so subtle that we don't even recognize it.
Silent weapons.
For
quiet wars.
Yes.
But Deanna, I have not taken a tap water shower since the end of 2009. And my brain, I have not had fluoride. I get like spring water, you know, or distilled
sure.
water. Yes. And I do not eat out hardly at all. I mean, I had like some fish today out, but, you know, it was like fried fish. And I do not eat cows or chickens. I eat fish, milk, and cheese as my protein source and beans, you know. Stuff like that, but I, you know, so I'm like a fishitarian, but, yeah, so, but no, I mean, it makes a difference. It really does.
Sure it does.
You know, because cows are for milk and cheese and chickens are for eggs and manure, you know, we don't need to be eating these animals, you know, and, I mean, you know, we can make a difference. We really can. And we're at that crux, we're at the point. Where we all need to come together and form some kind of a network, you know, and we need to,
well,
you know, somehow.
That's what alternative radio does. It helps people to make decisions that are good and beneficial for them, and we can talk about the past because the past is prologue, and we can see what our government is doing. Then we can. We have choices. A lot of times people think that everything is hopeless, that we can't make any choices, that we can't make any decisions, but we can. And it starts with us.
Yeah, I guess I just realize it starts from within, and then you can project it outward at that point.
Once
you clean your own house and you have your house own house in order, you can do what you can for other people.
Right.
I know. I'm too much of a dreamer. I just want us to create our own monetary system, and you know, create our own groups of civil people, and you
those
know,
are all good
fight
goals.
Fight the evil powers that be.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all things that we should strive for. I agree. So it takes steps. So right now we're in the propaganda stage.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, guys, I love you both. And, you know, hail to Mike Sledge. And if anybody wants to, you know, check out Mike Sledge's show 11 on November 21st of last year, he began the White Man March. And I give all creds to Mike Sledge. Mike Sledge, I love you, and more power to you, man. And I hope you're healing and recuperating, and just relax and you know, take a hiatus, man. All right.
Thanks, Rick. Awesome.
All right, brothers, sisters. Ciao.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, so I do want to thank Renegade for putting that together and making awareness that diversity is white genocide. Part of our problem is suicide, though. We are choosing to perform abortions on our own children that haven't been born yet, and just choosing to intermix with other people. And part of that is the game plan is for us to be all equal, all one.
Right. Sure. And when you look at the movements, when you look at the whole abortion industry and how that started with the women's movement.
Part of the Martha Singer crowd, huh?
Yeah, Gloria Steinem. It was a CIA operation. She was an operative. She was an operative with the CIA. And that's how she got her Ms. magazine. It was all funded. And when you look at the CIA, the things that they do, they are not intelligence gatherers. They create chaos, and they create chaos in other countries as well as in this country. They're not supposed to be creating chaos here, but they sure have. And one of those things was, of course, the implementation of the women's movement. And you had a lot of people who were probably quite happy with what was going on in their lives. But then after they listened to her and all of her nonsense, they begin to think, oh, yes, I'm not fulfilled. I need to go out and get a job. And of course, when the woman goes out of the house, the kids are left to kind of fend for themselves. And the whole thing was so that two people in a household would then be paying income taxes.
Yep.
And then they could... Then your children would fall more under government control through the schools. The schools would maybe be fixing breakfast for your kids, and they would have more school programs. And it was just all a big operation.
Daycare children is what I call them today.
Sure, sure.
And my son was never in a daycare, thank God. So
right. And this was all to disable a family, to marginalize the family, to marginalize the influences of the parents in the home. If I had children of school age right now, I'd never send them into the public school, ever. It's the worst thing you could do for your child.
Pretty much. Unfortunately, with the divorce rate as high as it is,
Yeah, 50%.
A lot of parents don't even have equal decisions in what school they would like their kid in. It's kind of like whoever the main caretaker is will make that decision, and then the other parent really doesn't have much of a say today. And
right.
It's usually the man, unfortunately. But
that is unfortunate. Absolutely.
Yeah. Did you want to take a break? We've got about 45 minutes into the show to go. Did you want to take a break?
I'm okay.
Okay, good. Me too. Good. And
That was our break right there.
Yeah, perfect. Perfect. Did you want to indulge yourselves back into the Chicago core of this whole Christian Zionist movement, and wanted to hear more about kind of like the fomentation of this and kind of like your take on what you found.
Okay. Could we, before we do that,
yeah,
just talking about Russia just a little tiny bit. I wrote an article. It's been a few years back. And it was called The Bush Family's Project Hammer, Hammering the USSR's Economy. And in 1989, President George H.W. Bush began the multi-billion dollar Project Hammer program using an investment strategy to bring about the economic destruction of the Soviet Union, including the theft of the Soviet treasury, the destabilization of the ruble, the funding of a KGB coup against Gorbachev in August of 1991, and the seizure of major energy and munitions industries in the Soviet Union. Those resources would subsequently be turned over to international bankers and corporations. On November 1, 2001, the second operative in the Bush regime, President George W. Bush, issued Executive Order 13233 on the basis of national security and concealed the records of past presidents, especially his father's spurious activities during 1990 and 1991. Consequently, those records are no longer accessible to the public. The Russian coup plot was discussed in June 1991 when Yeltsin visited with Bush in conjunction with his visit to the United States. On that same visit, Yeltsin met discreetly with Gerald Corrigan, the chairman of the New York Federal Reserve. So, what happened in 1991 has something to do with what is going on now.
The tearing of the wall happened right around then, didn't it?
Yes. Yes. That was part of, part of it, sure. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that has something to do with what's going on today. Can you expound on that?
I mentioned earlier that there were a lot of Jews still operating as leaders in Russia.
Sure.
Now, I've heard a lot of good things about Putin, but he was KGB. Did he have something to do with the coup? I just wonder. The Jews took over Russia in 1917.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, okay, so they're just going to give it back now and turn it over to the Christians and have a resurrected Christian church in Russia. And I don't know. I just can't see them reverting back to anything.
Now, you know, what's also interesting, I heard Mike Sledge bring up in a show a couple months ago, was the library Rebbe Schneerson being...
Oh, yes.
From New York to Russia?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Shabbat Lubavitch Library. It's a prized possession of theirs. Everything that can, you know, is inside of it.
Yes.
Jewish artifacts and books
and
whatever.
Yeah. And you've got to consider all of that. You just have to consider all of that. And Putin went to the Israeli state when they decided to have a Holocaust kind of a, you know, say, oh, it was a memorial. I don't have my notes right in front of me. Mm-hmm. But Putin just seems to go along with this. On June 13th, 2013, while at Moscow's Jewish Museum and Tolerance Center, Vladimir Putin said that the first Soviet government was composed of 80 to 85% Jews. He decided to nationalize the library of Rabbi Joseph I. Schneerson, the former leader of the Shabbat Lubavitch movement. Therefore, Shabbat representatives in the United States began moving books to the Moscow Museum in June of 2013. Putin also said that the predominantly Jewish Soviet government was guided by false ideological considerations. So I'm not sure, you know, he's talking out of both sides of his mouth here. thing.
But what is it really showing us? They're moving prized possessions from a safe haven in New York, which they might not think so safe anymore, to possibly a safer area?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a museum. They're protecting their valuables, the artifacts.
Yes.
And we know that these elites have been, going after artifacts throughout centuries. These things are important to them for some reason or another. There's definitely some valuable information contained in whatever it is they're protecting.
Yes.
And collecting.
Yep. And let's see, what else did he do? Well, he made certain that the Red Army was glorified for all of their wonderful work during World War II. And when you look at the Red Army and what they did in Germany, I mean, they raped 50,000 women at least, nailed them up on barn doors. They were raping 8-year-olds and 80-year-old nuns, and he's going to glorify them? I just find that, well...
Plus the Holodomor.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Mm-hmm. So...
So when you consider that, and, okay, Project Hammer itself was staffed with CIA operatives and others associated with the National Security Apparatus. Covert channels were already in place as a result of other illegal Bush activities. So they had some objectives. One of them, that the project would use secret illegal funds for unapproved covert operations and that the American public and Congress would not be informed about the illegal actions perpetrated in foreign countries. Now, we're talking about the CIA here.
Mm-hmm.
And the first objective was allegedly to crush communism, a growing political philosophy and social movement. And to this end, this group called the Vulcans, under George H.W. Bush, waged war against the Soviet Union. So, I don't know. I mean, the Vulcans... functioned as a benign group. It was led by the Council of Foreign Relations member Condoleezza Rice, and she attempted to augment and compensate for Bush's lack of experience and education concerning foreign policy during his presidential campaign. Now, she had been Bush's Soviet and Eastern European Affairs advisor in the National Security Council during the Soviet Union's disillusion and during the German reunification, which happened July 1st, 1990. So you had the reunification of Germany in 1990, then you had the Soviet Union fall in 1991, what was it, August of 1991, and the people that were involved in the Vulcan group included Richard Armitage, Robert Blackwell, Stephen Hadley, Richard Pearl, Rabbi Dove S. Zackheim, Robert Zolik, Paul Wolfowitz, Dick Cheney, George P. Schultz, Colin Powell. These people were all in the Vulcan group, and they also ended up in George W. Bush's administration.
Sounds like the PNAC group.
Yeah. But they were all working together before that.
Sure, absolutely.
And Pearl and Wolfowitz have been accused of being agents for the Israeli government.
Well, and they're dual citizens too, aren't
sure,
they?
Sure, sure. Just as the mayor of Chicago is, right?
Oh, of course, definitely. Yeah, you ever notice how much they're putting the Chicago flag in our faces now? I never even knew the Chicago flag about 10 years ago. I didn't know it existed.
Oh, I didn't know it existed. No, I didn't.
The Chicago flag is the Israeli flag with the blue.
Yikes.
And there are four 6-pointed red stars in the middle.
Wow.
So four hexagrams that are red, with the blue Israeli
stripes on, you know, merging like a sandwich with the stars in the middle.
Wow.
That's a Chicago flag, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Gotta love it. So we've got another caller at 205. Hello, 205.
Hey, this is Steel Jeb. I'm just listening to him. But
hey, Jeb, did you want to add anything to the current Ukraine-Russian conflict or Christian Zionism, as you know it, as far as your research and what you found?
Well, I found that Christian Zionism is a form of insanity. But as far as the Ukraine goes, I'm glad to see secessionist movements taking hold around the world, no matter where they take place, and because I believe that if that idea takes hold and takes root and becomes more normal, eventually my people may very well secede from this empire. And so I think it's a good thing in the long run.
Sets the stage for us in the future, for sure.
Absolutely. Pardon?
What do you think of Golden Dawn and what they're trying to accomplish?
Well, I agree with Golden Dawn. Are they cooking up something any particular this that I haven't missed? But I mean, as far as their general outlook, you know, Greece for Greeks, I agree with that wholeheartedly. Didn't they change their name in order to try to get around some sanctions that was placed against them? Wasn't their party actually outlawed?
Yeah, National Dawn is their backup name. I'm not sure if they've implemented it. I don't know if they're officially not allowed to be on the ballot as Golden Dawn anymore or not, but that is their backup name, National Dawn.
Well, I wonder how it's going with that, because if I'm not mistaken, the party was outlawed and a lot of their leaders were actually arrested. And I was kind of wondering if it was going to die after that or if it was going to make it stronger. You know, there's only two ways oppression can do, you know, it'll either kill you or make you stronger.
There's a couple of gentlemen over in the East Coast that are part of the Golden Dawn branch of America that do a podcast, like maybe once every 2 weeks. I would look them up. I'll post it in the link later in Renegade.
10-4.
All right, Jeff. Anything else, Jeb?
No, sir. No, sir.
All right. Thank you so much for calling in, and I'll keep you on hold.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Deanna.
Yes. Now, going back to the Russian issue, BP Amoco became the largest foreign direct investor in Russia in 1997 when it paid $500 million to buy a 10% stake in the Russian oil conglomerate called Sudenko. Then in 1999, Tyumen Oil bought Sudenko's prize unit, Chernogorneft, which allegedly made BP Amoco's investment worthless. Tyumen offered to cooperate with BP Amoco on the development of Chernogorneft, but BP Amoco was not interested. In October of 1998, Halliburton Energy Services had entered into an agreement with Moscow-based Tyumen Oil Company called TNK, their efforts were focused on the four western Siberian fields, the first one being the Samo-Lauretskoye field. And TNK has proven oil reserves of 4.3 billion barrels and possibly as many as 6.1 billion barrels, with crude oil production and refining capabilities of 420,000 barrels a day and 230,000 barrels a day, respectively. TNK markets gasoline through 400 retail outlets. In 2002, Halliburton and Sibneft, Russia's fifth largest crude oil producer, signed an agreement. Sibneft will use Halliburton's new technologies to improve well construction and processing, while Halliburton directs all project management. So when you look at some of these things, and my paper is quite long, it's like 12 pages. When you look at what happened corporate-wise in Russia after 1991, what I saw was a lot of multinational corporations going in and snatching up resources in Russia.
I see it too, based off of what you just said.
Yeah. And Putin was financially rewarded by the collaborators and was happy to purge some of the annoying industrialists who stood in the way, one of which was Mikhail I can't pronounce his name.
Mikhail Gorbachev?
Okay.
Yeah. It's a Russian name, right?
Okay, yes. He was the manager of Yukos, the company that he built into Russia's second largest oil company after acquiring it for $168 million when his bank, Menatep, the first privately owned but notoriously corrupt bank since 1917 and wiped out in August 1998, purchased it through the controversial government privatization auction in 1995. So you had these auctions going on, you know? There was a lot of things going on right after 1991. And people were losing the corporations that they had built, and they were being taken over. It was a large-scale theft. There was a large-scale theft of the Soviet Treasury funds before and following the USSR's collapse in 1991. Now, who do you think benefited from the Treasury's collapse in 1991?
The people who pretty much already had the money there to begin with. I don't know. All the multinational corporations, of course, too.
Yeah.
Well,
what Putin allowed to happen was that big business owners, foreign business owners, could come in and take over some of Russia's assets.
Just go into the highest bidder, right?
Gobble up
all the major mineral rights or what have you that are valuable for the long term, just like what happens everywhere else.
Right, and the Rothschild family assumed Khodorkovsky's 26% control of Yukos. Okay, and then Dick Cheney, he was the CEO at Halliburton. And he was also he had an association, of course, with the state oil company in Azerbaijan Republic, called SOCAR. And in November of 1997, Dick Cheney, in anticipation of imminent events, had appointed Edgar Ortiz as president of Halliburton Energy Source Services.
Edgar Ortiz, it sounds like
Ortiz.
A Murano Sephardic Jewish name.
Yes, yes. And he was the president of Halliburton Energy Services, and that was their global division. And so you had all of this oil stuff going on in Russia. The Yukos oil company merged with the smaller Sibneft oil company, and this happened in 2003, which created Russia's largest oil and gas business and the world's fourth largest private oil company. And Halliburton is the company that announced that they had made an agreement with the Tyumen State Oil and Gas. It was just all... You know, you have to look at all the stuff that happened over there, all the corporate things, all the mergers, all of the sale of previously privately owned entities, companies that were then taken over by foreigners, particularly foreigners that I just already named,
that were
associated with PNAC.
You got to follow the money when it comes to who is ruling over us, because there is a paper trail, there is transactions being taken place.
Right.
There's acquisitions. There's takeovers.
Yeah.
Good point. So to me, that's also a telltale sign that America could be in the same position as Russia eventually.
Absolutely. We are.
Down of society and then the gobbling up of all the mineral rights and oil and natural gas. They're already talking about the XL Keystone pipeline coming in, and that's going to transform America just when that happens.
Sure. Sure. And you can see it also as it occurred in China. China is the new America. It is growing. It's got all the American corporations that used to be, you know, Motorola and just all these corporations. If you go to Beijing right now, you're going to see all these corporations doing big, big business in China. And they're hardly viable here anymore. Well, they're not.
This company from China called Hawaii is a known like telecom provider and handset for mobile phones, Chinese company. And I think it was 60 Minutes did an episode on how America has been trying to prevent any type of influence of this company to come over to America as far as having the sale of handsets, infrastructure, buying buildings and being here in general, because they're tied to the intelligence agency of China.
Mm-hmm.
And, in Schaumburg, Illinois, they've taken over a corporate building there. It's probably about 30, 40 stories high. And then they're building a facility over in Texas. So they didn't do very well for preventing this company from coming over here.
Right. Right. And as you mentioned earlier, when you look at the influence that religion has had, and when you look at some of the first people into China were missionaries.
They were Jesuits.
There were Protestant missionaries there also.
There were, and I know that the Blackstone family were connected with some of the missionaries that were trying to go into China, but the Jesuits had been there in, like, the 1600s. So,
okay.
Yeah, there's books on the Jesuits in China and Japan and all the other Asiatics. They took over the Philippines, took all their gold, you know.
So are you talking about, Sterling Seagrave talked about?
I'm not familiar with his work. Sterling Seagrave, I'll look into him. Thank you for that.
Yeah. He wrote Gold Warrior. And, oh, my goodness, it was some book. Let's see, I'm sure that's the name of it. Sterling Seagrave. He had to leave the country, actually, after he wrote that book, he and his wife.
I grew up with Filipinos, and I was in the accelerated math and science classes with them.
Uh-huh.
And over time, I was eventually, you know, still talking with them. And, you know, we got into talking and, you know, they're familiar with what happened, the raping and pillaging of the Philippines at one point.
Oh, yes, indeed. And Sterling Seagrave talks about that. His website is bowstring.net. And he wrote the book Gold Warriors. And anyway, I interviewed him at one point.
I'll listen to that. Thank you.
It was on October 31st. I think it was October 31st of 2011, I believe.
I'm sure Mammy's over there has posted it. I could just do a search over there and find it.
Yeah.
Hopefully. But, I'll listen to that because I'm into world history and it just doesn't have to be about Judaic history. It's just history in general.
Sure. Well, Gold Warriors, America's Secret Recovery of Yamashita's Gold, and who benefited from that massive plundering of several Asian countries. And he writes about that. And, And even Reagan benefited. Also, the Bush family benefited because that was, that was a lot of money. And that money was used to for political purposes in a lot of places.
Oh, for sure. Just to have the gold, to say that you have it in general.
Sure.
Somebody from Renegade Broadcasting is calling in. It could be Kyle. Let's see. Hey. Somebody calling in from the Renegade Skype. Okay. All right. Never mind. Okay.
So when you look at all this, the gold, the movement of gold, for instance, before 9/11, I think they transferred a bunch of gold out from the basement of Tower 1.
Jonathan Azaziah told me that he knew somebody that might have been there when they did the gold heist.
Yeah. And I think one of the first things that they did with Ukraine is that they moved their gold out. Okay, and getting back to the Philippines. When MacArthur left the Philippines and left his men to suffer the Bataan Death March, he took all the Filipinos' gold.
Hmm. That's in the interview that you heard in the book you read?
No, let's see. That is in a, it's in my, it's going to be in my fourth book.
Okay. Oh, fourth book. Okay. So that's interesting. We didn't really talk much about your third book yet.
No. We didn't. But
it's good to travel, you know, into different points in history because it's like playing connect the dots.
Right. Right. And so you have to figure out who's collecting all this gold.
Where's it going?
Yeah.
Basel,
indeed.
Switzerland?
It might be.
The BIS?
Might be, yeah. Yeah.
But who knows? I don't think the Vatican vaults are as important as
police
to make them out to be anymore.
I don't think so. And when you look at the all the gold in China, because what the Japanese did, or what Seagraves said that they did was that they plundered all of China and they melted down all kinds of stuff, Buddhas and all kinds of stuff. There is a lot of plundering going on now. That's just the claims. I don't know whether that's true yet.
Well, I spoke with Filipinos. They did take their gold.
Right. And there was, in fact, the Japanese hid a lot of that gold in the Philippines because the Allies had pretty much kept the Japanese from taking it back to Japan. And so they hid it in the Philippines in various caves and all kinds of things.
Eesh. So where do you think we're headed, Deanna?
Oh, gosh.
What's up with this Baha'i faith? I know that they're in our own backyard.
Indeed. Yes, I've heard about them. And certainly in just about anything that you read, you're going to find a universal, they want universal education through Common Core. There's institutions for world peace. You mentioned the League of Nations. Now we've got the United Nations.
UNESCO, its other subsidiaries, yeah.
Absolutely. A world government, a world parliament.
Agenda 21.
Agenda 21, a world police force, which we are certainly part of that. We are are the world police force.
Yes.
A single world currency, a world taxation system, and we know that that Social Security isn't just in this country, it's all over the world now.
And the UK, they are already taxing people for CO2.
Oh, my gosh.
They have two taxes. They have congestion tax for having, I think, at least more than one vehicle possibly, and then a CO2 tax.
Wow.
And you could avoid that by getting a hybrid, they say.
Huh.
So they want us to drive in vehicles that only have a limited driving period of time.
Right, like you can only go 10 miles away from your home or something like that.
And the infrastructure isn't even really set up for any of these charging stations or anything yet.
Wow. Wow.
So, but as far as back to the Baha'i being in our own backyard, they're over in what, Evanston, Illinois?
You know, I'm not sure. That would be an interesting place for them to be, given that Evanston and Skokie in that area is very, very much Jewish.
Yeah, the North Shore in general, for the most part.
Yeah.
Anything, it seems like, east of 53 going north.
Right.
But as far as the Baha'i in the Chicago region, it's the only real true temple in North America.
Wow.
They have other temples, per se, but it's not an official Baha'i. It's like little subsidiaries that have smaller little buildings that they use. But the one in Chicago is almost as nice as the one in Haifa, Israel, where their headquarters is at.
Right.
And I would like to take a trip over there and do a little filming if I could.
To Israel?
No. To the one in Chicago, since it's so close.
Huh. Well, now that I don't have my daily program on RBN, I was thinking about going up to the Holocaust Museum and just causing trouble.
Yeah.
So maybe I should just, that's in Skokie.
Well, the Holocaust, yeah. Skokie,
yeah.
That's an interesting place. You did an interview with, what's his name? Frank Joseph Cohen?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. Finding out, I was listening to a broadcast, and this guy was into this ancient mounds in America, and
yeah,
I was
right.
Fascinated, and then I do a little researching, and this guy changed his name. He was a pedophile.
Yeah.
He was the one that they used in the Blues Brothers to mock as far as starting this Nazi National Socialist
right.
front or whatnot, and a parade down Skokie. And this guy
did a follow-up program on him the day after. I think I had him on Thursday or Friday, and then on Monday I did an expose on Frank Joseph.
Yeah.
Frank Collin.
What kinds of things did you discover about this guy? He's a real scumbag from what I see.
Oh, absolutely everything. And I what I did in the first program is that I interrogated him, and I said, oh, okay, so what were you doing, like, between 1977 and 1983, you know, when he was in prison?
Right.
And he was giving me all kinds of, oh, yeah, I was in college down in St. Louis. And,
yeah.
You know, and, see, I just, I knew who he was when I had him on. And he approached me. And so I thought, okay. All right, let's do this.
Hmm.
So, anyway, I was just asking him very leading questions.
Yeah,
where I could actually, I knew he was lying. Absolutely.
I think everybody did.
Sure. Yep. That was a fun interview.
So, the follow-up show, what kinds of things were you saying?
Oh, I played tapes of him as a Nazi, and I just... A big exposure is what I did.
Nice. what do they call that? A Rochambeau.
It was probably not very nice of me, but sometimes you just have to do that. I mean,
got to load on these people. We got to expose these frauds.
And I try and treat everybody with respect, but sometimes it's just really difficult to do when you know that you're talking to somebody that's just. A big fraud.
But Deanna, they're still like reenacting in Skokie today plays based off of this Frank Joseph character.
Mm-hmm.
And they're reenacting, the horror of this National Socialist wearing his Nazi regalia and, you know, and how
he was Jewish for one thing. But,
yeah.
I mean, it was all...
It was staged.
Sure. Yep.
So, but they're still doing these plays in Skokie today, and it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's like the Holocaust, and you had Eric Hunt on with his new film. What did you think about that new film?
Oh, I love it. Love that film. It's a fabulous film. His first film was wonderful. And during his first film, part of the time he lived in his car. He was banned from going into the repository there in Southern California where the Shoah archives were. And he is just a terrific young man. Absolutely a terrific young man. He didn't start out to do this. And he was accused of kidnapping
Weasel.
Elie Wiesel.
I call him Weasel.
Yeah. And he is a weasel. I met him, too. I met him, and I have a signed copy of his book.
Wow.
I mean...
Was it when he was on Oprah?
No. He was actually in a synagogue, probably in Skokie, and I think this is probably in 1988. And I didn't grab his sleeve and check to see if he had a number. And that's unfortunately what Eric did. He just grabbed him by the sleeve, and he said, "Hey, I want to interview you." And Wiesel actually had him arrested, and he went to jail for a year and a half. It was terrible.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
All I wanted to do was ask a question.
Exactly. That's not much of a crime. If anything, you can call it assault, which is a misdemeanor, which is a slap on the wrist and no jail time or nothing. It's usually like a $100 fine and nothing else.
Exactly.
But that's not how they treated it, though.
No. No, not at all. But, he's come back fighting, and his new film is just terrific.
Yeah, I think he's a trooper.
Yes, he is.
Any other interesting interviews that you've had over the years that stand out the most?
Oh, goodness. I interviewed Helen Thomas.
Wow.
And she said she could not believe that we could talk about the Jews on a radio program in America. She just kept saying, "I can't believe we can talk about this." And I only had her on for 1 hour, and it was just terrific. I mean, I just, I'd always admired her gumption, the fact that she would ask hard questions. And of course, especially, I admired her after she said that the Jews ought to go back to where they belong. And she was Lebanese. She was just a very courageous person.
Nice.
So it was an honor to be able to talk to her.
Good, good. It's an honor to have you on the show too, Deanna. I've got Marcus who wants to probably talk with you again from Germany.
Okay.
All right, here's Marcus. Hey, Marcus. Oh, didn't work. There we go. Hey, Marcus, sorry about that.
Are you there?
Marcus, you're back on. Did your ring come back on? I thought you did. All right, sorry.
Okay.
Because he refreshed back to a low number for the whole time, so never mind. If anybody else wants to call in, we've got a few more minutes in the show. It's 347-633-9657, and we've got a 618, another 618. 618, welcome to the show. 618.
Maybe that's the same one.
It's a different 618. Oh, no, it's exactly the same number. That's weird. I don't know why it's on there twice. That's odd. Alrighty then. Okay. So, Deanna, anything else that you would like to add? I know that your website is Spingola.com. How's things going with RBN? I know that there was some kind of friction, and you've got a person that replaced that slot of yours, and he seems kind of mainstream.
Yes, he's very mainstream.
And is that for RBN?
Is that what?
Is that a good sign for RBN to go in that direction other than the direction that you had your show in? I mean, it's kind of different than what your show's based on. I know there's a lot of different personalities on there. Do you like the direction that RBN's going and the direction that American Free Press is going?
Let's see. RBN for people who can handle the truth? Well...
Are people going to gain any important information from RBN today with you being on there? Not as much as you were, only on Sundays. There's not a lot of other hard-hitting hosts that I can see.
Well, I think that Mr. Stettmiller wanted to get a wider audience, and so it is his network.
Sure.
So I can't say that I'm sorry that I don't have a Monday through Friday program. It was a lot of work. I worked very hard to get really good guests and to present good information. And I love the listeners. The listeners are terrific. And I think that many of them will follow me to Sunday. So we all do what we can.
Okay.
For as long as we can.
Yeah, and it's probably...
Where we can.
It's probably nice to have a little free time now compared to what it was like, you know,
sure.
doing 5 days a week like that. Now, with American Free Press, it seems like there was some kind of controversy with some hosts supporting the Sandy Hook and then some not, and having debates amongst the same type of guests that were coming on.
It was weird.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
It's confused a lot of people, actually.
Confused me. I don't know what's going on. I've just always been one that's looking for the truth, and so I don't know what's going on.
When people are like you doing that, and then you've got other people who are running a platform for people like you, but then they do the opposite of what you're doing, it kind of feels like a lot of friction to where you don't really feel like you're making any headway sometimes.
I wonder about that. That does seem a little unusual, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Hmm.
Kind of stinks.
Well, gosh, I guess infiltration is just part of the program here.
Well, I think like some people just decided, hey, I'm just going to do my own podcast. I'm solo. I don't have the commercials. I don't have the sponsors that I have to appease or worry about saying a certain thing because of the sponsors. I know that's
sure.
a problem with a network like that.
Sure. Sure.
All right.
I did a little timeline on my website. And if people look at the March schedule, you can see some of the links on my March schedule page you can see the timeline there and some of the things that happened in March and just interesting little tidbits.
Oh, okay. Nice. So on Spingola.com, you got a nice little timeline for people to look at. Okay. Any upcoming interviews that people should be aware of coming up?
Yes. Okay. This Sunday. I have Carl Rattle coming back, and he's going to talk more about the affiliation between AIPAC and the kosher food tax that everybody in America has to pay.
Wow, good stuff.
It is such a this is such a big scam. Oh my goodness. Now, I had him on my program a couple of weeks ago, and he's coming back on Sunday for the whole 3 hours, and I think that is going to be very, very, very interesting. And then I'm also talking with a school safety expert, a real one.
Oh, not the other schmo that people have been passing around.
No, I'm going to talk to a real one.
Does this person know this how big person?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Good. That should be exciting, huh?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Interesting. Good, good. And then other than that, your book, your third book, when will that be released?
Hopefully within a month.
And we could find that on your website. Is it on any other websites for sale or just directly?
It'll be on Amazon.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And
Anything
let's see,
else?
Who else have I got coming on? I've got Sheila Matthews coming on.
Who's she?
She is the co-founder of Able Child. She will be on my American Free Press program on the 25th, and she has been working, her organization has been working to get a hold of Adam Lanza's medical records. And the assistant, state attorney said, oh, we can't release those records because people will stop taking their psychiatric drugs.
I know SSRIs are part of the whole Brave New World that they have before us.
Yes. And, of course, when you consider all of the psychiatric drug companies that are in Connecticut, when you consider that Yale is in Connecticut, that Yale had a lot of the drug testing using children, that Adam Lanza actually was at Yale in one of their little programs, even when you consider what was his name? Stanley Milgram, who did his test at Yale.
Well, I wonder if John Woodall was involved with Adam Lanza at all. Have you heard of John Woodall?
Yes, I have.
He's part of that Unity project.
Yes.
Part of the Baha'i faith.
Yes, but that's speculative. It's speculative. I mean, you can bring in all of these things and speculate on a lot of things.
Yeah.
But you also have to bring in some facts. I mean, you can say, oh, yeah, it's all part of Agenda 21, or it's all part of this, or it's all part of that. But, hey, what about the corporations? Which corporations are running a damage control operation to divert our attention to a lot of questions that have already been answered?
Probably Eli Lilly.
Yeah, you just need to. Speaking of Eli Lilly, the gentleman that used to work for Eli Lilly in their drug development program, well, he was actually selling. Let's see, what was he? What was his name? John. Let's see. His name was. I've got it in my notes here. It's an amazing book that I read. It's called Side Effects Death, and it's a Kindle book. Let me just open Kindle here and look at my library. I thought we were over at 9 o'clock. It's after 9. Are we still on?
Well, the blog talk will still archive. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and Kyle's streaming the show live through his own Skype system.
Okay.
So it's being heard live over at Renegade right now.
Okay.
And being archived for later listening for people who aren't in Renegade.
Okay. Side Effects Death, which was written by John Verapen, V-I-R-A-P-E-N. And if you read his book, Side Effects Death, and then you read other books like Seeking Sickness, Medical Screening by Alan Castles, who I've also interviewed, and some other books that are just tremendous that talk about the drug industry. It is unbelievable, the billions of dollars that the psychiatric drug industry brings in.
Absolutely. And there was also a former Yale graduate by the name of Lewis Lerman that was running Rite Aid drugstores for quite a while, too. And he even wrote a book with Ron Paul, CFR, Council for National Policy member, PNAC member, and financier of Arbusto Oil, George Bush. So,
yikes.
This guy has a resume.
I also had on my program David Healy. He is the author of Let Them Eat Prozac.
Oh, wow.
Then I've had Linda Logman on the program. I've had her on a lot lately. All just kind of putting this thing together.
Yeah, and aren't we already getting that from our tap water?
Yes. Well, Linda Lagerman, yes, we are. We are probably getting Prozac in our tap water. But she is the person that has been promoting this wonderful, wonderful DVD, The Hidden Enemy. And it talks about all of the drugs, the psychiatric drugs that the soldiers are on, the military is on. And that is a test group. And they started this testing on the military early in the 1900s.
I believe it.
We often think about it as something, oh, that's just something really new. No, no, no. It has just gotten so out of control. There is an unbelievable percentage of people in the military who are on psychiatric drugs.
Absolutely. And even in mainstream films like Jacob's Ladder, they even discuss the MKUltra program at the end of the film, like in, you know, written text and how it ended. And, yeah, right, sure. It ended. It just transformed into something a little bit more deeper and darker.
Sure. Dr. Logman said that there are 280,000 infants, 280,000 infants under the age of 12 months who are on antipsychotic drugs. Babies who maybe cry a little bit too much are on, they put them on antipsychotic drugs.
They do that with the women right away, right when they're done having the delivery of their baby, too, because of this depression that they experience, this postpartum depression.
Exactly. And think about Andrea Yates. In 2000, or was it 2001, drowned her five children
mm-hmm.
in the bathtub.
Yep.
Her husband gave a press conference the very next day.
And,
about that.
And it was related to the drugs that she was on, or?
Yes. Yes. And I think that, just in 2010 alone, 89 billion dollars in sales just for psychiatric drugs. 89 billion. Just for psychiatric drugs.
Oh, and if you're low income, you can get them for almost free.
Yeah.
And a lot of the people who have the free health care through the government do get them for free.
Right.
So, yeah, the goal is to have as many people as possible on something of that nature to just simply control them. It's the Brave New World, if you probably have read Huxley,
sure,
read all
sure.
these other novels. Soma is already a drug. It's already a muscle relaxer. They call
sure.
it Soma. It already exists. And it's under other names, you know, that people are being prescribed all the time.
There's 1 million children under the age of 5 in the United States on a psychiatric drug. There's a 46% increase in ADHD drugs. All contribute to suicide or violence.
Yeah, and I'm sure that the TV probably has some trigger mechanisms in order for this to trigger something inside them with what they're taking, too.
Sure.
And I'm sure they're tied together.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a scary world. So my kids aren't on anything. I don't know if you've had children that have been on anything, but I don't think there's other alternatives. A lot of it just starts with a proper diet.
Sure. So you have to look at what is, was it guns? Is it guns? No, it's not guns. It's drugs, psychiatric drugs. And if you look at all of the events, and we don't know how many events there are, people generally don't do any of the research. They don't look at the list of shootings in this country. They just don't know what is going on.
Well, there's several that have occurred over the years, and the influx of these SSRIs are just, it's just ridiculous with the stats, and it could be even higher. Now, the gun issue, it seems like more areas are becoming more laxed on guns. Even Chicago, they're talking about allowing conceal and carry. So the gun sales have gone up since all these
absolutely.
Things have occurred.
In fact, they had to hire 200 new people to work in the they have to do background checks for anybody that buys a gun.
Yeah.
Okay.
So more people on the payroll for that now.
Right. So the agency that does the background checks, they had to increase they had 300 employees, now they have 500. It dramatically increased after Sandy Hook.
Yeah.
And so you just have to look at all of these factors. You can't just...
Deanna, do you think that the people that are pulling the strings want people to just eliminate themselves? Is that why all these guns are being in everyone's hands nowadays? I mean, to pretty much act like a riot, you know, the riot police don't come in right away. They let everybody beat each other up and
they
come in after.
I thought about that. Yeah, I thought about that.
They clean up after the fact.
Yeah.
Why get involved in the conflict when the conflict's already there that they want?
Sure.
They step in and then, oh, well, here's a solution. This won't ever happen again.
Sure. Well, it's interesting. I took a gun class last April.
Okay.
And I bought a gun in January. And when I went to look at the guns, gosh, they had display racks just filled with all kinds of guns. And you had to take a number because there were lines. This was January of 2013. And I went back 3 months later to get some ammunition in order to take this class, an NRA class, up at a range up in, where was that? It was up north, not too far. It's a very nice shooting range. And so I went in on Monday, and gosh, all the gun cases were empty, and there wasn't any ammunition on the shelves. And I said, wow, what happened? And he said, oh, well, we get a shipment in on Tuesday night, so if you're here on Wednesday morning, then you'll be able to buy some ammunition. And so I got there an hour and a half early because I thought, well, I just want to get out of there. And I didn't know how many people were going to show up. There was a gentleman there already from Chicago, and he said, you can't buy ammunition in Chicago. So he and I, we chatted, and by the time the store opened, there were, gosh, I don't know, 50 people behind us in a line.
Holy smokes.
And he was number one, I was number two, and when that door opened, we bolted up the stairs because the ammunition was upstairs, and we bolted up the stairs. And, it was really something.
Wow, and the pricing of it now compared to what it used to be, like, let's just say even 10 years ago, it's ridiculous.
Sure. But you have to ask yourself, okay, so who owns the manufacturers? Who owns those companies that manufacture bullets and other ammunition? And who owns the gun manufacturers? Look at who sits on the board of directors and who owns them.
Yeah, exactly. And the transactions over time of whose hands they fell into, because a lot of them are publicly traded companies anyway.
Sure.
So, yeah, definitely it's about manipulation and taking money out of people's hands, too. I know somebody who jacked up their whole credit card, you know, and then what? Now they got that debt. But they've got their firearm in case if the shit hits the fan, but they're still struggling now because they were living paycheck to paycheck, and then that little savings they had, now
yikes.
They're paying it.
Yeah.
You do have a lot of fear mongers out there, like your Alex Jones types that
want
to pump down.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're feeding the beast, you know, by doing that.
Sure.
I mean, it's right to have self-defense, but not to overdo it and buy, you know, 3-4, you know, assault rifles, you know, things like
that. Well, I don't know whether you can even buy an assault rifle. You can buy an automatic, but I don't think assault rifles are actually that you can buy one.
Well, not out in Illinois, I wouldn't imagine, but
yeah,
I know other states the AR-15 is an assault rifle that people are...
The AR-15 is actually, it is not an assault rifle.
Oh, okay.
The AR-15, I explain that. Let me see. I explain that on my website. I'm doing this, an evaluation of a Sandy Hook film.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been studying a lot about weaponry and stuff. The AR does not stand for assault. It does not stand for assault rifle. It's just, you know.
Okay.
It
sure looked like one when I seen a picture of it, but...
Well, I'd kind of like to have one. They're one of the most popular guns, actually, even before Sandy Hook. They're a very, very popular gun, very easy to handle. 10-year-old kids can shoot with them. Girls can shoot with them. In fact, Sean Hannity had a woman on who was showing how to use one. And this was probably within a month after Sandy Hook. She probably weighed 115 pounds. They're very easy to use.
Well, that's part of the controversy was, can Adam Lanza, with his body type, use an assault rifle like that?
Of course. Well, an automatic weapon, yes.
Right, an automatic weapon.
Yes. And yes, it could. If a 10-year-old kid, I've seen a video on the internet of children using those, and there's so many misconceptions, and
you had Sophia Smallstorm on your show. What did you think of that experience?
Oh, I've never had her on my program.
Oh, I thought you did.
No, I invited her on my program, but she declined. She said that she felt it would be a hostile environment, and that I should ask Dr. Fetzer.
Mm.
Which I asked Dr. Fetzer, and he declined, and then he reconsidered, and then he declined again.
Why not have them both on so they feel a little warm and fuzzies inside?
I don't think that they would be on my program, either one of them.
Oh.
And I'm not sure why.
What are they afraid of?
I don't know.
I mean, you don't seem vicious, Deanna.
Well, I don't think that that Mr. Halbig would say that.
Oh, true. That's true. That's a good point. He felt a little soft after that, after I heard the interview with the other AFP guy after the fact.
Well, I mean, he's been on everybody's program. He's been on Alex Jones. He's been on so many programs, and nobody challenges anything that he says. He could sell snow to an Eskimo. He just goes. He has the ability to portray himself as a victim, and he has the ability to just monopolize a conversation, which I did not allow him to do. And a lot of people criticized me for that, but I just felt like I wasn't going to allow him to monopolize the conversation. He had already said all the things that. He'd said the same thing on 20, 25 programs. So everybody's heard what he's had to say. So I figured, okay, let's ask him some questions, not just have him come on and give us the same old whatever.
A repeated speech that he's gotten memorized.
Yes, exactly. Right.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yep. So out of this Sandy Hook incident,
and he took down his website. I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt.
Oh no! He took down his website.
He took down his website three. He took it down on the 7th. He was on my program March 4th. He took his website down on the 7th because, well, first of all, he used some referrals for his business of people who were dead before he even started his business.
I've kind of forged my resume to look a little bit better than what it was.
But did you use dead people
as referrals? No, definitely no. No, I just, like longer period of time of working somewhere where I didn't work.
Okay.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. And he said he had a suite. Well, the address was a suite. And I said, well, isn't it really a mailbox at the UPS store?
Oh, yeah, you can do that, or other places have their own little mailbox stores, too. Exactly. You have no idea where they're really at unless you could search and kind of maybe a Google Maps and find out what business that is.
Yeah, and he just started his business. Not that that's not okay.
Sure.
But I'm not sure why he took it down, but it's gone. But he said on his Facebook page that he had to take his website down, he got fired from his job, or he left his position because his partner was upset that he was asking questions about Sandy Hook. Now, didn't his partner know that he was asking questions about Sandy Hook because he'd been doing this since, right after it happened?
Yeah. Yeah,
so wouldn't his partner have known that he was asking questions? I mean, half the world knows that he was asking questions. Wouldn't his partner have known it?
Do you think that this guy was planted in there, or he just took it upon himself just to possibly create fame for himself?
Or both.
He's running with it. Do you think he was a plant, though? I mean, a lot of operations like this have their plants.
Well,
their functions.
I don't know that I would name people as government plants, but I do believe that Cass Sunstein, in his documents that he created in 2008, indicated that the best thing the government could do to destroy the truth movement was to infiltrate and to provide information about an event, and then later expose that information as totally false in order to discredit the entire truth movement. And if they could prove that one event that the truthers were talking about was fake, Cass Sunstein was particularly interested in 9/11. Because so many people believe that the Israeli state, the Mossad, and the CIA collaborated in order to perpetrate 9/11. And that was a very, very big issue for Cass Sunstein. And so what he wanted to do was to have a program, and he was placed into a government position beginning in 2009, and he served in that position until 2012. He was in the position where he could have done that. But to infiltrate the truth movement and to then discredit a real event so that they could discredit everybody who's been talking about 9/11, who's been talking about the 1993 bombing of the first bombing of the Trade Center, the Murrah building in Oklahoma City, and then, heck, why not even throw in the USS Liberty? They could say, well, that was a fake thing too.
Yeah.
You cannot say that everything bad that happens in America is a government orchestrated event.
Right.
Bad things happen.
With Sandy Hook, do you think that there was any government involvement in there, or it was just a shooting and that was it?
Well, I think that, do I think that the government set this up?
Well, I don't know. I don't like using government. I don't know.
Okay, well, let's put it this way. Sometimes I lay awake at night and I think, okay, what would be easier, to exploit a situation after the fact, like, Adam Lanza, who was on drugs, who was definitely an antisocial character, would it have been easier to exploit that situation and push new legislation or other things, Or would it have been easier to hire 40 actors to play the parents and then hire all the people to play all of their relatives to get all of the policemen that were involved in the investigation to create thousands and thousands and thousands of pages of reports to get the EMTs that did go into the school and did take care of the people that were in there? Would it be easy to get them to lie and to get the local privately owned newspaper people to lie and to get all the funeral director to lie, to get all these people to lie, to hire all these actors, to get the media to lie, to do all this stuff? I mean, they can't even put together a healthcare website.
Sounds like a lot of confidentiality agreements people would have had to assign.
Yes, and then you have to pretend that 20 people were dead who then go on with their lives. So how are you going to hide them?
Yeah, it would seem too complicated to perform an operation with all these different actors versus playing off of a situation that already
actually did happen.
Yeah.
And the other thing, the questions that they ask, and it's very interesting that you ask all these questions that have already been answered, and people with integrity who are sincerely seeking answers to their questions readily accept evidence that addresses their issues, even if it contradicts their previous views. For instance, I indicated on a program that I did and in my evaluation of Small Storms video that for the last 13 years, the volunteer firehouse, has had a Christmas tree sale for 13 years. And they still use this story that they hid 26 Christmas trees behind a firehouse just so that they could pull them out the day after the shooting and decorate them for the victims.
Yeah, and were there exactly 26 like they said, or they're assuming?
They brought 26 out. I didn't count them, but you can give them all this information, and yet they still ask the same questions.
So do
you answer the questions, and they keep promoting that they're not willing to change their position, even though the question has been answered.
Well, that's not a true researcher then, because you're always looking for answers when you're a researcher.
And exactly.
This incident seems like what you're saying as far as being exaggerated and twisted and going in different directions, but it seems to be only directed at the people who are looking at these types of incidences and researching about them. Your average person isn't looking at this anymore. They're just going about their lives. This is being directed at people like us.
Sure. And like one of Hal Big's questions, why and for what reason would the FBI classify the Sandy Hook Elementary shooting when they did not classify the Columbine shooting, which also was a mass casualty shooting incident?
Yeah.
Okay.
And there's been more than just that, too.
On November 25th of 2013, the Connecticut Division of Criminal Justice released its state's attorney report on Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting. Okay? It was just a summary. On December 28th, 2013, News 12 Connecticut reported in an article titled, "Police Release full report on shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School. The official report, it was released on the 27th of December, 2013. It includes several thousand pages of cell phone text, photos, 9/11 calls. There's audio files. I've downloaded the entire, all of the report, the entire report. Under that article, which was released, reported the very day after the entire report was done, the very first commenter, the next day, after all the report was released, on December 28, 2013, Wolfgang W. Halbig, who said that he is associated with the Abilene Christian University, is asking about the FBI classified report. Okay, they just released thousands upon thousands upon thousands of pages and the audio files, the 9/11 calls. And he's talking, he's saying, well, what about that FBI report? There was an FBI report, a classified report. They did not know how many shooters were involved. So they classified a report for 90 days that had to do with the warrant that they had to get for the Lanza home.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so basically what he is saying, all of these reports were released, and the next day, he's complaining about a classified report by the FBI. So does that mean that in 24 hours that he actually read thousands upon thousands upon thousands of pages?
No.
No.
No, even senators and congressmen don't even read the bills that are...
Of course. And so what's he moaning and groaning about an FBI classified report when he's got all of these pages of reports that was released the day before? And I'm just thinking, and I see, I was looking online today, and he posted that same challenge on several websites that were announcing the final report.
So he's putting all this in emphasis on this one report where all this, the meat and potatoes are in the other download
exactly.
That we got.
Exactly.
Interesting. Why is this guy so much at the forefront of this?
I don't know. The other thing he said, who was the certified environmental biohazard decontamination company contracted by the Newtown Public Schools to remove 45 to 65 gallons of blood, skull fragments, brain tissues, bodily fluids, blood-soaked carpets, and any other decontaminated area inside the Sandy Hook School. Okay. Scientists estimate the volume of blood in a human body to be approximately 7% of your body weight. An average adult body with a weight of 150 to 180 pounds will contain 1.2 to 1.5 gallons of blood. Okay. There were 6 adults, 20 children. If you figure that 20 children at an average weight of 60 to 70 pounds each would equal about 8 gallons of blood. 6 adults would equal about 9 gallons of blood, which would total about 17 gallons of blood.
Yeah.
And that is if every single victim totally bled out. People do not ordinarily bleed out when they are shot.
No.
Therefore, there was not 45 to 65 gallons of blood.
Mm-mm. No.
Okay.
Enough wounded or dead that could even accumulate that much.
Exactly. And so they are using these hyperboles, and nobody's checking them. Nobody's saying, wait just a minute, Mr. Halbig. Wait just a minute. They're just buying into all of these questions. And the questions, really, you have to say, okay, is it the objective to really acquire information, or is it to introduce skepticism? Is it to drum up dissent, division, and distrust within the so-called truth movement? And this repetition of these seemingly reasonable questions on various radio shows lends an air of credibility to them. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. And BT, you're online. Turn on the radio, please. Hold on one second. Deanna, I do agree in this distrust. I see it just happening within American Free Press with the different radio hosts. And
yes.
Michael Collins Piper no longer being there.
Exactly, after 33 years.
33, okay. It's one of those numbers.
So I think they ask questions not because they want information, but to generate a lack of confidence in public officials who admittedly often deserve our distrust. But if people ask public officials for specific information that those officials have already provided in the formal reports, then there is no need for further query if that information is the real objective. And why would you ask the officials who've already made the official report, why ask them for more information if they've already given the report?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's because of, like, the 9/11 Commission report. People are just in distrust altogether. I don't know.
And they're exploiting that.
Yeah, they're exploiting that, exactly, like the Sunstein character. Hey, VT,
yes.
Did you want to add anything?
No, I'm just listening.
Can you speak up a little louder? Deanna Spingola is on for a little bit longer.
I have a lot of respect for Deanna Spingola and everything. I just want to say that with the aspect of, you guys are talking about Sandy Hook, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
And I agree with Deanna. I don't live that far from Connecticut. And there's a lot of people there that have victims and family members there that lost loved ones. And you can't deny the fact that people died there. I mean, that's my opinion there, and I've seen a lot of evidence to prove that people died there. I don't understand where these people are saying that nobody died. There's no evidence of proof that anybody died. People died there. There are children that died there. And it really, to me, having four children and I can't even believe that if I was in that situation that they were in, I would be balls to the walls on trying to find out what happened there. And I think that the parents that were there did the best job they could to find out the realization of what happened. It's not a big conspiracy. You can't say that everybody there was a conspiracy. The people lost freaking kids there. You know, people lost children there. And it makes me sad that there's people out there that's projecting an image that nothing happened. It's all a joke. It's all a conspiracy. And Deanna is absolutely right when she says that it's not what these conspiracy people think. People lost children there, and it's sad. And regardless of what everybody thinks about the conspiracy theory, is that there was actually children lost there, and people had loved ones gone. And that's my opinion about it. And I'm sorry, and a lot of people are not going to like what I say, but there's a lot of, there is dead children. And I'm sorry.
That's a great tragedy, right? The Baha'i faith being at the presidential podium, and this John Woodall character allegedly connected to the Baha'i faith seems to be putting together some kind of recovery project and the healing process. He seems a little suspect to me, though. With this.
Oh, I definitely agree with you there.
you know.
Yes.
He's already admitted that he's been in other school shooting situations and provided
sure.
the same type of psychiatric care.
Sure. It's definitely an exploitive situation.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
It's interesting. I recently, last week, or on the 9th of my first Sunday program,
mm-hmm.
I talked about a video. A friend of mine had sent me a video, and the video claimed that the children had not even been born, mm-hmm. that the 20 victims had not even been born, because this person that made this video could not find the birth certificates. And so I did a little test. I said, take a little test to determine your vulnerability. Are you gullible to Internet propaganda? And then after they watched the video, I asked the questions. Did you believe the claims it made? If you did, why? Was it the music, the authoritarian way in which the presenter presented the so-called evidence? Did he give you his sources so that you could validate them yourself? Was it his claims? Rather than accept those claims, and what he did was that he said that he could not, first of all, he said that we already know that Ancestry and some of these other Internet websites
mm-hmm.
added the Social Security death records of these children. And he said, and he implied that he had checked the Social Security death master file. Okay, if you go to the website for the Social Security Death Master File, what you need to do is click on the user-based subscriptions to see what it would cost to have a peek at the master file. For one user to look at the master file, it costs $995.
Whoa.
I do not believe that the person that made that video did that.
No.
The other thing that he said was he looked all over the Internet, and he showed us these pages, very brief glimpses of all these pages that he was looking for, and he'd say, not found, not found, not found. He said, I have not found any birth certificates for any of these children. Well, if you visit Connecticut's Department of Public Health, it will tell you how you can get a birth certificate. Now, this didn't just happen. I've done family history research for a number of years, and they've always had certain parameters that you had to meet in order to get a death certificate. For instance, the census records. There's a 72-year privacy. The latest census record that were released were the 1940. They were released in 2012 because there has to be a 72-year wait because of privacy. So in Connecticut, birth records less than 100 years old are not available. They are not accessible to the general public. To be eligible to receive a copy of a birth certificate, you must be able to document that you are related to the registrant in one of the following ways. You are the registrant, and you are 18 years of age or older. You are the parent, guardian, grandparent, or spouse of the registrant. You are a child or grandchild of the registrant. I mean, you cannot just... They're not going to put all these things online.
Right.
It's only a fool would believe that all of this would be, that all of these children's birth certificates would be online. And yet this person created this video, it's a 6.5-minute video, and said, oh, none of these children were even born because I can't find a birth certificate. Well, of course not, stupid.
Yeah, I mean, people can use those documents and say that they're that person, so why would they make that stuff available to people?
Sure, but people believe this. They fall for this. They believe this. And the other thing that is kind of irritating to me is that certain people have made they have vilified the parents. They have made them objects of hatred, which I think is pretty awful. For instance, one of Hal Big's questions, why did the parents of the two children who died at the Danbury Hospital not allow their children to donate their organs to other children waiting for the gift of life? Well, those terrible, terrible parents. Well, I've had on my program several times Dr. Paul Byrne. And, well, I'll just read you what I wrote about this. One may not, in fact, Hal Big sent me an email.
Mm-hmm.
He copied James Tracy, who I've never talked to either via email or any other way. He copied James Tracy, and he copied Jim Fetzer. And so I replied to all three of them, and I said, one may not extract organs from a dead body as the vital organs are no longer viable. Organs can only be extracted from a living body who the doctors have declared brain dead, a new category of death developed at Harvard in 1968 by a 13-member committee. One may only harvest those parts of the body that do not have an oxygen or blood flow. Doctors accomplish this by giving the patient a paralyzing drug so that the patient, who is very much alive, cannot respond to the pain that he feels as the doctor is removing his or her organs. Organs are now classified as parts. Most of the states have passed the Uniform Anatomical Gift Act, which governs organ donations for the purpose of organ transplant. Unless one opts out of this donation, the state may harvest one's organs if a doctor declares any patient brain dead. Hospitals make millions of dollars through organ extraction. There's a huge market in organ trafficking as one's parts brings in more profit than actually saving his or her life.
Oh, yeah.
If the children were declared dead, their organs were not viable. In other words, you have to be alive to donate your heart or your kidneys or a lot of other things.
So there has to be free-flowing blood still pumping through your veins rather than coagulation and rigor mortis.
The minute you are dead, if you cannot be dead to have your, they take your heart out last, then you're dead. What they do in an organ harvesting situation is that they kill you. They murder you to get your heart. That is the last organ that they extract. Now, they're going to continue to ask this question, even though I have, that is the answer. That's what it is. That's what organ harvesting is.
Yeah, and I know China has been known to have mobile organ harvesting trucks who will do that while they do it when you're still alive. They don't
they have
do
to.
It when you're dead, yeah.
They go to the prisons, and that's, it's what happens. And so what Hal Big is saying, yes, they're depriving these other children of the gift of life. again, making the parents as, horrible people.
And he's playing on the people's ignorance,
mm-hmm.
of people who don't know the simple fact that you have to have blood flowing through the organs in order for them to be even worthwhile to
Yes.
transplant into another human body.
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. I just don't get why is this guy
well,
in front of us?
According to James Tracy, he has already taken in $10,000.
Mm. Wow. Just from people listening to him or like from
Well, he's got a new page. He's got a new page.
And he even displays how much money he's taken in. I know
so
some
that's
of those.
Just what James Tracy announced in his website today.
Okay.
And Rents put up a little donation button for him.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. And then when you're making your rounds on Alex Jones, that's suspect right there anyway.
Oh, of course. Of course. Yes. Yes.
So.
But he's got a new website, Sandy Hook Justice.
Yeah.
He put it up I think on the 13th. And he's already collected $10,000.
So people are getting paid off of a tragedy. Great. What else is new, huh?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So, Deanna, we don't have any more callers. BT did say it's all about gun control. I think, personally, myself, eventually, yes. But not right now.
Not right now.
They're putting it into our minds. The seeds are being planted with gun control, but it's not going to happen just yet.
Right. It's other things. It's other things. And yep.
Deanna, thank you so much for coming on. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about?
No, I think I'm talked out. I actually get up really early, and by 7 o'clock I really don't. I'm not very wide awake. We've done a 3-hour program.
Yeah, yeah. And are you a tea person or a coffee person?
I'm a kombucha person.
Kombucha.
And a kefir person and a coconut water person. I don't drink, I drink teas. That's what I make my kombucha out of, and I don't drink coffee.
Kombucha is not that difficult to make either, right?
No, it's all, it's a piece of cake.
Yeah, that's good stuff for you too. Well, Deanna, I hope we bump into each other sometime. Maybe we can even stroll over to the Baha'i Temple and do a field trip. But other than that...
Or the Holocaust Museum.
Trouble there. Yeah. Are you allowed to film that? I've never been at one of those places before.
I think you can.
Okay.
Why not?
Yeah, I mean, I would try to anyway if they wouldn't allow it, but I would try to do something as far as filming something. Because, I mean, I'm sure it's different in every city where they've got their general, you know, meme of what they're trying to, you know, promote, but I'm sure it's still, you know, designed differently and different, maybe different artifacts and pieces of history in these places. So,
you know what? That reminds me.
Hmm.
It doesn't matter how many times the number changes, whether it gets down to 73,000 people that actually died in Auschwitz, of which 38,000 were Jews, they're always going to say that 6 million died. It doesn't matter whether new information becomes available. And I think you can kind of compare this with the Sandy Hook guys.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what new information becomes available. They're always going to revert to their key talking points.
Do you think 9/11 is the same way? It kind of seems that way.
Yes. I think, that's an entirely different situation, and I have my views on that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, I think the government certainly did collaborate. They had to. They had to stand down.
Yeah. Yeah, but I still see the Mossad element there more than anything.
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
You know?
Sure.
You don't get free room and board in one of the most expensive buildings, you know,
yes,
artists or whatever they were.
Sure. Sure.
But Deanna, when are you going to be live again?
When am I going to do what?
When are you going to be on a live show again? Sunday?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you so much for these 3 hours, and we're going to call it the night. Deanna, be in touch, and take care.
You too. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
And that's it, folks. That was Deanna Spingola. She's over at Spingola.com, and her show is Spingola Speaks. That was a wonderful 3 hours with Deanna. We covered a lot of different topics. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And we're going to close out the show. And thank you, Kyle, for everything that you've done with the White Man March. Keep on trucking. We're here, and we're going to just keep moving forward and keep doing these marches until people get those seeds planted. Thank you, everybody, and you have a good night.
this war.